Greetings and salutations, friends, and welcome back to The Arcade. We are your video game podcast here to infotain you for the week of Friday, July 11th of the year 2014. How's it going, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages? I am Mike the Legend, who's so glad to be back with you, and so glad that you can be back with us, because it means you survived the Independence Day weekend, if you are a listener in America, and also that you survived the Canada Day celebrations earlier last week. To all our Canadian listeners, and to all our European, African, mid-African, and Eurasian, and Australian, New Zealand, and Australasian listeners, thank you for joining us. We don't know what you celebrated this past week. We only know the North American holidays because, well, that's what's important to us.
Yes, not to our Australopithecan listeners, which surely you are extinct, unfortunately, for perhaps millions of years, even.
Moment of silence for them.
Yes.
We okay, mourn them
enough.
Every day.
Oh, yeah, that's enough. But anyways, this week I am the other voice on this program. I am Dennis, the man that is over the moon at the possibility of Homestar Runner coming back.
Yes, big news this week, apparently. That's one of the most beloved websites and web cartoon series might be seeing a new life again.
Yes, according, well, I saw it on TheVerge.com, that, they had reported that, one of the brothers chaps, I don't recall which one, they did some update on some podcast somewhere that, they'd basically talked about their April Fool's update that they did to the website this year, which I had caught before, I guess it got taken back down and the website restored to normal, but they talked about it and how it got a lot more traffic than they were expecting, and that, you know, they kind of did it to test the waters about possibly coming back into it, but they wanted to make sure that, you know, they wouldn't be just doing it for no reason, and I think hopefully they got the reason that they needed to start doing it. I mean, I watched Homestar Runner all the time, but, you know, kind of lost interest after the updates became more and more infrequent and eventually just stopped entirely. And it's been a good 4.5, almost 5 years since they've even done anything on their website. So that would be kind of cool if they brought it back, but because all I know is that April Fool's update, it held up. It was funny. I laughed at it.
It still felt like the old content that they used to produce, you know, regularly.
Yeah, but not just old content. Like, sometimes, like, you know how sometimes when there's something that you liked years ago, and then you go back to watch it and it's just not as funny? This was not the case. And I actually then went back to watch a few more of the old cartoons and still found myself laughing at them. They were good. They were actually good. They were pretty much quotable almost endlessly.
Homestar Runner and the Strong Bad Emails and Teen Girl Squad and everything else that was produced, all the content produced for HomestarRunner.com seemed to be just at the forefront of just web series before it really became a thing that is now just so common. Before there was an inundation of content to the web.
Yeah, I mean, way before YouTube, way before just anyone in a webcam can come up with, you know, basically, like, their own stuff. Like, when you look at, like, the people who are internet famous these days, like the PewDiePies and whatnot on the mm-hmm. internet, these guys were doing something totally original and basically their own cartoon series that I would say rivaled the quality of stuff that you would actually see on television.
Definitely.
In many cases. And especially with the writing. I mean, like, the writing and, like, but the interactive elements, too, were really added a whole other thing to it that, you know, you couldn't get out of a TV show. Like, there was no reason to watch a TV show over and over and over again because there was nothing you can click on to see additional things pop up and
yeah,
additional
TV doesn't
jokes.
Really have interactive Easter eggs.
No, but every Homestar Runner cartoon always had interactive Easter eggs. I mean, I would watch it 2 or 3 times holding the shift key, just seeing what would pop up as yellow and just saying, oh, there's one, click it, and then just see what kind of silly throwaway joke they would throw in just as an additional layer on top of the actual cartoon itself. But yeah, I mean, when you think about the content up to that point, it was really stuff like Joe Cartoon and the Hamster Dance or the
Frog and Blender thing.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Or like the starting of Newgrounds, but anything on there was not up to the quality of Homestar Runner, I wouldn't think.
Certainly not.
But yeah, I mean, they were one of the first, and they really
gained a tremendously cult following, a large cult following.
Yeah, and then even like started to seep into the mainstream, which was amazing when you would see people on like actual real TV shows wearing like Strong Bad shirts and stuff.
And see that just walking around in your daily life, down the street, perhaps you're catching the bus and you see someone on there wearing a Homestar hoodie or something, and they leveraged it into merchandise, which now that seems to be, that's another way of generating revenue that is just ubiquitous with people and popular series sell merch.
Yeah.
And they were doing it before this was even just a tremendously common thing.
Yeah, so I mean, it's cool that they're potentially coming back. I really hope they do come back. I really hope I can start reading some new Strong Bad emails because, yeah, the Strong Bad emails were always like, they were the best. They were the best. I'm sure I'm not alone in I would, every Friday or whenever it was, I think it was Fridays when he would check his emails.
Just, sounds familiar.
I'm pretty sure I'm not alone in just like refreshing until I see the update there and yes, there it is. And then watching it and then talking about it to all my friends, annoying them on MSN, which would have been the way of getting to people on the internet and whatnot.
MSN Messenger, you've just dated yourself.
Yes, a little bit, unfortunately. But before your Facebooks and MySpaces, there was MSN and email.
And the Twitters. And the Instagrams.
Yeah, there was MSN and email, and that's what we had.
We liked it!
Yes. There's MSN, email, and Homestar Runner before there was Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube.
Yes,
so
in the post-AOL universe, that's what we had.
Yes, so yeah, so hopefully it comes back. Hopefully it's comes back for regular updates. Hopefully we get to see more Strong Bad email. Hopefully there's another Team Girl Squad.
I mean, there's no end to the possibilities of what the Brother Chaps could do with the different, well, characters they have. I mean, they could leverage it into many different mediums.
And I think that's actually another thing that's amazing. Like, a good decade after really being super into the cartoon, there's still all this stuff that we distinctly remember about the cartoon as well. I mean, you can't really say that for every possible web series. I mean, that's actually just, I think, a good sign of a good entertainment thing in general, rather than just web series or TV show or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you remember all the specific characters, you remember different silly adventures that they got themselves in, like, you remember odd, just jokes that they would throw around, like.
And also, too, the characters, and also just the other ridiculous things they would do, aside from producing Strong Bad email videos or whatnot, such as Peasant's Quest.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, that was like the Videlectrics games, you know, which initially were just things like that tire game where you would roll around as the tire, or there was the one I think is the duck that they had in one of the emails where you'd kind of walk around quacking. But then really, Peasant's Quest was like the ultimate. I remember when Peasant's Quest came out, me and a friend of mine were on MSN up too late because we're both insomniacs kind of thing. And it was like, all right, let's play Peasant's Quest. And we're just like, anytime each one of us would get stuck, it's like, oh man, I'm at this part. What'd you do there? Oh yeah. Okay. Well, I'll try doing this. Oh, I did this and this happened. Oh, okay. And then, you know, after about a good couple of hours, we both found that we'd beaten the game. It's like, nice. This is the first day it was released. Huh. Interesting. But, yeah. Can't really think of anything other than Homestar Runner that I ever got that excited over.
Well, it's hard to, because it was your first. And, you know, you always remember your first web series that you got really deep into. The one that was just there for you and just, you know, shared a tender, loving laugh with you.
Indeed. to put it in a very creepy fashion.
I don't know.
Thank you, Mike the Legend.
You are most welcome. Most welcome.
All right. Well, that took a very unfortunate turn
it
there
sure
near the
did,
end, but we got through it.
But
we've made it. That's the end of the opening banter.
It is.
Now we can get into the actual show.
Yes, the Ludicrous Leadoffs is next up, which we did not do last week, because last week, if you caught it, and we hope you did, and hope you enjoyed it, if you haven't, spoiler alert, it was a music show. You still a chance to get it, because it's going to be there forever. It's the internet.
Until we get a cease and desist saying we can't have songs just on our site like that, but...
Until that happens,
and
you can still go and grab the summer music special that we did last week.
And then you can hear low-quality versions of some of your favorite hits.
And songs that you didn't even know qualify as summer hits. Well, they do.
Indeed.
We found different ways to fit songs into the different themes of summer that we thought of. Summer cars, summer jobs, summer romance, and summer vacation. And
indeed.
So built the summer music show around that.
While we didn't have Ludicrous Leadoffs last week, we did have a blast from the past.
We had two.
Well, I'll just say we had at least one. I know we had two, but at least one of them was Forrest Gump. And, you know, it was a good movie. It celebrated its 20th anniversary last week.
It did? And
we're not going to have that as a blast from the past 2 weeks in a row. That would be ridiculous. No point in doing that. But we have to mention Forrest Gump again, because there was a little bit of news that we weren't able to get to last week, but we still think it's worth bringing up.
It is.
As a ludicrous leadoff, because it's worth bringing up as a ludicrous leadoff.
Now, as we've seen basically all throughout video games as being a viable medium of entertainment and form of entertainment, movie tie-in games are just tremendously common. I mean, hell, going all the way back to the NES.
Going back even further than that.
If E.T.
We can even think of E.T. on the Atari, which really... Well, a lot of people think was the one that killed Atari. That can be debated. But E.T. was then. And movie tie-ins go way back.
Exactly.
They've been around as long as video games have been around.
And so there are some movies that perhaps lend themselves more readily, more obviously, to having a video game made of them. Any sort of standard summer action blockbuster type movie with a lot of explosions and a big muscular type hero character and guns seems to fit more into a video game than, say, something like Forrest Gump.
Yeah, or at the very least, something with a more interesting interactive type story, like Back to the Future had a couple games.
And then actually got revisited
as a whole other game series later on, back with newer technology. But Forrest Gump never had a release of a video game. It would have been a Super Nintendo Sega Genesis game, or maybe a
late
NES, probably not, but more likely Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, possibly even Sega CD game. But
and it's hard to think what a Forrest Gump game would have looked like back then, because the story of Forrest Gump and just the movie as a whole doesn't really lend itself to being a 16-bit game, or would have back then. There's no obvious way to tie it in and appeal towards the main demographic who were playing the consoles back then, which was, well, younger kids.
Yeah. Guys like you and I, who would have been into more like... Well, I mean, there's any number of different types of games that we would have been into, but there was... When you're thinking about what kind of stuff you would have been competing against, even other movie games, like Jurassic Park... had a game that, on one system it was sort of like, almost like Doom, and on another system it was
almost
a top-down Zelda-esque kind of thing, and, things like that. Could you really do that with Forrest Gump? There was no real action elements in the game.
No, you couldn't even really say make it like a platformer, like, say, the Home Alone games were.
Yeah, it was really, the only thing that really... Like, there was ping pong referenced in the movie, there was Forrest Gump running, but running as a game genre was not really a thing yet. It wasn't until a few years ago that the endless runner really started being a thing, and unfortunately, now it's... I would argue that the endless runner is kind of on its way out, that, there's been enough of them, people have kind of done it to death...
It's run itself into the ground.
Yeah. To not to use too much of a terrible pun, but
I will.
I mean, yeah, the Endless Runner has kind of had its day in the sun, and it's not really that relevant of a genre anymore. I mean,
but it might be on its way out. But you know how to reinvigorate it, give it some new life. You know the best way to do that?
By using a 20-year-old movie property.
Damn Skippy.
Alternatively, the one way to ensure that the Endless Runner is dead is to make an Endless Runner based off of one stupid joke. One stupid line and about, well, it's not really a stupid line. It was just kind of more of a motif of the movie, really. Run, Forrest, run. You know, it was Jenny and many other people would say to Forrest Gump throughout the movie, setting up the fact that he was really good at running. And then that whole culminating in that one whole scene where he ran across America back and forth a couple times and he grew the big beard and then eventually got a following of people. And, well, really, if you don't know...
Just watch
the damn movie. It's a pretty pivotal scene in the movie and it's kind of funny when it happens. But, I mean, it's not... Like, it's one part of the movie. It's not the whole movie. It's one segment of the movie that is memorable, sure. But is it game-worthy? Well... some people thought so. Some people for sure thought so.
And the fine folks at Genera Mobile in New Zealand approached Paramount Pictures with the idea to make a Forrest Gump running game.
Yes, a Forrest Gump Endless Runner, as it were. And, so it's based off of the movie from 20 years ago. Which was based off of a movie, or which was based off of a book, sorry, from 24 years ago. 28 years ago. I can't do math, apparently. From 1986.
The original novel was written by Winston Groom, which then later was translated into the highly successful Tom Hanks film, which then became loved by everybody, which then now the fine folks, again, at Genera Mobile, and officially licensed and consented to by Paramount Pictures, decided to turn into an Endless Runner. Just the one aspect of Forrest Gump, the fact that he ran, and he ran well, and he ran fast, and he ran long and far, that's the game. That's the iOS game. That's the mobile game.
Yeah, so they took the 5-minute sequence from the movie and turned it into an Endless Runner. That, a lot of the internet, by the way, is saying is essentially just Subway Surfers. The game Subway Surfers. Reskinned with Forrest Gump as the character.
I don't know what you're talking about, because this game, this mobile game called Run Forrest Run, is very true to the movie. It has young Forrest, it has adult Forrest, and we see the transition between the two. And also, I mean, Forrest, when he's running, just like in the movie, he has to run his way through traffic. He has to jump over trains and slide under traffic cones. Just like in the movie.
That is not just like in the movie. Just putting that out there. In case anyone actually hasn't watched Forrest Gump, no, the movie's not actually like that. Like the Legend is being sarcastic.
Me? Sarcastic?
So, yeah, if you like Subway Surfers and want to see Subway Surfers reskinned to be Run Forrest Run with Forrest Gump as the character rather than you guys from Subway Surfers, well...
The game's now available through your iOS store. You can get it on your mobile device. If you're just...
It's the perfect marriage between two things that are no longer relevant.
No, that would be a Forrest Gump music game.
Well, okay.
Forrest Gump Guitar Hero.
Forrest Gump Hero? It's a game that comes with a ping pong paddle that you just...
Yes.
They're two unrelated things. It's just a ping pong paddle, and it's like supposed to be some accoutrement that goes with the game somehow, but doesn't actually... Actually, maybe it would. If it's a Wii Sports game, or it's like a Wii game, it comes with a ping pong paddle attachment, and you just have to play against, like, various dignitaries and such. And
different opponents, and then
shake Richard Nixon's hand.
And then tell LBJ you got shot in the butt.
Yes.
I'm assuming. I don't know for sure, but yes,
I believe that was actually Kennedy, but...
My apologies. Well, I'll have to watch the movie again and brush up on my Forrest Gump history, so that way I can properly appreciate the Run, Forrest, Run, Endless Running game.
Or, we both know you're not going to play this game. Are you kidding? Anyone? Are you trying to kid anyone?
Yes, the fine listeners at home who don't know any differently. But you decided, again, to pull back the curtain and reveal that the wizard is just a man pulling the strings, pressing the buttons, and controlling the levers.
Peanut butter directly out of the jar with a spoon. No, with a knife. It's a butter knife. Because he's too lazy to go get a spoon. All of his spoons are, they're in the dishwasher.
They're dirty. Well, all right then. Now that you've thoroughly pulled back and revealed all the magic that goes on behind the scenes here at the arcade, let's move on to our next ludicrous leadoff as we catch up on news from the past couple of weeks. This one, fairly recent actually, coming about in the past couple days, and it's
really scary.
It's a hell of a thing.
It might be the craziest upfront science gone mad thing we've come across in quite a long time.
We've had a lot of science goes crazy stories over the past, year, 2 years that we've just been finding them without even really trying too terribly hard.
And the thing about them is that a lot of them, they're crazy, but they'll require a lot of setup just to kind of say what they've done and kind of explain it and why it's crazy. This one requires no setup.
And not only does it not require any setup, but it's immediate, it's of the now, whereas a lot of the other science goes crazy stories, they're of things that could lead to something even crazier in 5-10 years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want
down
to think...
They're down the road kind of crazy.
This is the kind of story where it's crazy enough now that you don't really want to think about what crazy things it could lead to.
I can't see what the crazy thing it could lead to in 5-10 years.
All I picture is a type of gun that gets pointed at someone, and this particular thing happens. And this particular thing is, drumroll,
a loss of consciousness.
Yes, now, it's not just any loss of consciousness, because that happens when you go to sleep. I mean, that's nothing that special.
Sleep? That's where I'm a Viking.
Indeed. So, that's what happens when you go to sleep. That's what happens when you perhaps lost too much blood. You get knocked on the head a little too hard. I mean, it's not that hard to actually lose consciousness.
True.
But it is hard to make someone lose consciousness, like turn the consciousness switch off at will. Like me pointing at you going, you're now unconscious. That would be crazy, right?
It would be, and
guess what it is? Because it's actually happened that way. Purely by accident.
Not only did they did scientists at George Washington University, go Colonials, cause a woman to lose consciousness, but they more, I guess, the bigger punchline, if you want to call it a punchline, but the bigger wow factor, shock factor, is that they caused her to lose awareness. A quote here from the scientists who authored a study on their discovery of the ability to cause a woman to lose awareness, quote, "We describe a region in the human brain where electrical stimulation reproducibly disrupted consciousness," end quote. It's an important finding as the, quote, "neural mechanisms that underlie consciousness are not fully understood." And it's a hell of a thing. Now, this all came about when Mohamed Kubeisi,
and we're sorry. Anytime you butcher one of these names, just send us your complaints at info@thearcadeshow.com.
We apologize in advance, but Mohamed Kubeisi and his team were using deep brain electrodes to record signals from different brain regions to figure out where a woman's seizures were coming from. A particular patient went in suffering from seizures, underwent open brain surgery.
I mean, it's not uncommon for that to happen with epileptics and whatnot, to map out things like that and try to get seizures under control.
Certainly not. It seems pretty common practice now, but the doctors placed one electrode near a part of the brain called, or part of the deep brain called the claustrum, which is an area that had never been stimulated before. And when the claustrum, for those who don't know, such as, well,
most of us, yeah, who are not brain surgeons.
It's a thin and weirdly shaped sheet of neurons that's attached to the underside of the neocortex, right smack dab in the center of the brain. Its precise role is not known, though it is suspected to play a role in communication between the two hemispheres of the brain, specifically the regions of the brain that control attention. In short, according to George Dvorsky of io9.com, he says that it works like a conductor in an orchestra coordinating the cerebral cortex. But instead of synchronizing musicians, it synchronizes the time scale between various brain parts, resulting in the seamless quality of consciousness experience, or conscious experience, excuse me.
Yes, so, there was a report from New Scientist, written by Helen Thompson, that later went on to say, actually, and I quote, "When the team zapped the area with the high-frequency electrical impulses, the woman lost consciousness. She stopped reading and stared blankly into space. She didn't respond to auditory or visual commands, and her breathing slowed. As soon as the stimulation stopped, she immediately regained consciousness with no memory of the event. The same thing happened every time the area was stimulated during 2 days of experiments. Sorry. And to confirm that they were affecting the woman's consciousness rather than just her ability to speak or move, the team asked her to repeat the word house or snap her fingers before the stimulation began. And if the stimulation was disrupting a brain region responsible for movement or language, she would have stopped moving or talking almost immediately. Instead, she gradually spoke more quietly or moved less and less until she drifted into unconsciousness. And since then, there was no sign of epileptic brain activity during or after the stimulation. The team is sure it wasn't a side effect of a seizure."
So basically, she went from being awake, consciousness, speaking, moving to...
Yeah, it's like just
powering down.
Yeah, shut the switch off. Everything's going. You're done. Okay, that's
okay,
it.
Okay, and I'm back.
Yeah, it's like, oh, what happened? I seem to be missing a portion of my time entries for the last...
Hey, the clock on the wall says it's 5 o'clock, but I looked at it, and I swear it said, 4:30.
Interesting.
What happened? Well, you see, Dr. Kobayashi thinks that the results do indeed suggest that the Cloudstorm plays a vital role in triggering conscious experience, saying, quote, "I would liken it to a car. A car on the road has many parts that facilitate its movement, the gas, the transmission, the engine, but there's only one spot where you can turn the key and it all switches on and works together. So while consciousness is a complicated process created via many structures and networks, we may have found the key." End quote. So Dr. Mohamed Kobayashi thinks they may have found the key in the brain to experiencing consciousness.
Yeah. And awareness in general.
Yes. And, so. And having a sensory experience of all your surroundings and just everything that comes with being awake in the world.
Being a human being who exists and knows that they exist and is aware that they're existing and... is aware that they're aware that they're existing, et cetera, until it gets more and more meta and ridiculous, but as a human being, we're able to get meta and ridiculous, and that's one of those things that looks like they figured out how to turn off, which is scary as hell, and I don't want to think about what kind of neuro gun that some evil mad scientist will come up with, like embarrass your friends, go up behind them and shoot them in the head with this X-ray or this Q-ray or F-ray or whatever you want to call it. That's just beep. Oh, well, he's totally unconscious.
No, sleep gun.
Yes.
Now, it puts you to sleep in that it just turns your brain up.
While not killing you, definitely not doing you any favors.
Now, the trick is, how do you bring someone out of that? Well, that's what you need the awake gun for, which we include as a bonus gift.
Yes. Oh, man.
So yes, the long and short of it, again, scientists at George Washington University, go Colonials, have found a way to turn on, at least in this one particular woman, but they think it's all throughout in this one specific region of the brain, the Cloudstrom, that controls the conscious experience, and they can turn it on and off and just power her down.
Yes.
So more experimentation, more discovery, more research is going to be done on this, but...
So perhaps finally scientists will actually come to some sort of reasonable conclusion as to why we need to sleep, which is, by the way, still not known. People have, you know, people know, well, if you don't sleep, you're tired, and well, if you don't sleep for long enough, you can die, and you can do severe damage to your heart and whatnot, and blah, 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 but no one knows why that's the case. Maybe this is finally getting onto the road of, oh, maybe we'll start to understand these sorts of things. And then you can have, like, an awake, some sort of gun that just rejuvenates you, or a pill, some claustrum, I don't know, something to do with claustrum. Claustrums.
The delicious gummy chew.
They just come in a little package of, like, little brain-looking things. Ugh. All right, we've gone too far down that road. Let's move on to our next story.
Comes in cherry, grape, orange, and fruit punch.
And human.
No, that's just bubble gum. So let's move on from the ludicrous leadoffs now to our next story, which we are now getting out of the hangover from E3, which was in June. It's a big event that takes up a lot of time, a lot of attention, and so that's kind of why we did the Summer Music Show last week, to just give ourselves some time to decompress and finally just get out of that shadow of E3. It's no longer hanging over us, and one of the ways that we fully put E3 to bed is by looking over and presenting to you the award winners of the E3 Games Critics Choice Awards.
Yes.
We told you of the nominees at the end of June, and the people have voted, the critics have voted from many different publications, be they online, be they traditional print media, or what have you. And so the votes are in, they have been tallied, and it seems as though there are two real big winners from this year's E3 show.
Yes, two really big winners, which I actually wasn't really anticipating being the real big winners. I thought for sure it would have been something a little bit more more commonplace, or maybe more mainstream looking, like, you know, maybe a Batman or the Tom Clancy Rainbow Six Siege game would have maybe done a little bit better than it did, but, you know, that wasn't the case.
It sure wasn't, and we'll just go through some of the categories here. The main one, the most important one, the one that will be the blurb splashed on the box art of this game when it comes out.
Best of show, certainly.
The Best of Show award for this year's E3. The nominees were Alien Isolation, Batman Arkham Knight, Evolve, Middle-Earth, Shadow of Mordor, No Man's Sky, and Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Siege. Of those, the winner was Evolve.
Yes, the monster hunting game by Turtle Rock Entertainment and published by 2K Games.
Yes, the brand new title that was shown off for the first time, the multiplayer monster hunting game that actually enables players to play as the monster and fight against the humans that would try and do it harm. A nice little twist on things.
Yeah, and it also won three other main awards: Best Action Game, Best Console Game, and Best Online Multiplayer. So it certainly cleaned up in a lot of important different ways.
It sure did. But another all-important category at E3 was Best Original Game. The nominees for that award were Destiny, the new one by Bungie, Evolve, as we mentioned, No Man's Sky, Splatoon, the surprise title, the surprise online head-to-head combat game that Nintendo revealed at the end of their video that involves cartoon characters turning into squids and painting things.
Yep.
That one. And also Sunset Overdrive, the new game by Insomniac. That's also very bright, large world, and you shoot, mutants, giant pus-filled mutants. Of those, the winner was No Man's Sky.
Indeed. It won Best Original Game and Best Independent Game. And it was also apparently awarded a special commendation for innovation.
It did look pretty insane and huge.
Yes,
given
the
trailer of it, and again, your ability to just fly through space and then into the atmosphere of a planet.
And then just fly around on the planet.
And then land on the planet. Seamlessly.
Yes, quite seamlessly. It looked incredible. If you haven't seen the trailer, we highly recommend checking it out. We have a link to it on our website, thearcadeshow.com, from a couple shows ago, from the E3, one of the E3 shows.
One of the E3 wrap-ups. It's one of them. Both shows are good, but again, they're all up there for you to find. Best hardware at the event. The nominees for it were Alienware Alpha, Oculus Rift, PlayStation TV, and Project Morpheus. Of those, the winner was Oculus Rift, the virtual reality headset that is getting a lot of the buzz because, well, it was bought out by Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg for a cool $1 billion. You know, he just had that in his back pocket after he was done going to go fetch a coffee somewhere.
Indeed. And, the one strange category that I remember talking about a couple weeks ago that... The title of the category kind of confused me. The best social casual game, which to me sounded like it should be some Facebook kind of game thing. But no, the nominees for that one included Disney Infinity 2.0, Marvel Superheroes by Avalanche and Disney, Fantasia Music Evolved by Harmonix and Disney, Lego Batman 3 Beyond Gotham by TT Games and Warner Brothers Interactive, Mario Maker by Nintendo, EAD and Nintendo, and Yoshi's Woolly World, Good Feel, and Nintendo.
Which, I don't know how Yoshi's Woolly World or Lego Batman count as social or casual games.
No idea. But Mario Maker ended up taking home that title. I mean, I guess they must have needed to find a way to give props to that game in some capacity. I mean, it's about time that we've got a level editor for Super Mario 1, the first Super Mario Brothers game.
Level editor mixed with Mario Paint, mixed with... probably something else that's not coming to mind right away, but something else that is coming for the Wii U in 2015, as are, well, most games, as we maligned in our E3 wrap-up shows, but nevertheless. So of the big E3 categories, those were the winners. Again, Evolve, No Man's Sky, and Smash Brothers actually won a couple of awards. Smash Brothers for 3DS.
Interestingly enough.
Won Best Handheld Game.
And it also won... Well, for the Wii U, it won Best Fighting Game, beating out Guilty Gear XRD, or Zerd, I don't know if you want to pronounce it that way.
Third?
But it's XRD, I'm sure it's not the third Guilty Gear game, I feel like there's more games than that, but other games include Mortal Kombat X, Persona 4 Arena Ultimax, and Killer Instinct Season 2, but Smash Brothers, for Wii U, beat out all those.
Interesting. Nintendo really doing a good job of positioning Smash Brothers as being a hardcore fighting game, and trying to attract a hardcore fighting game audience. I mean, at E3, during the run of the event, they held on Wednesday of the event, they held a Smash Brothers tournament.
Makes sense.
In one of the theaters around the Los Angeles Convention Center to show off not just the new game, but also get people excited for it. And also during Comic-Con in San Diego, they're running another Smash Brothers tournament event. And they're also sponsoring the Evo fighting tournament, or arcade fighting game tournament, in Las Vegas, coming up in a few weeks.
Yeah, so... Yeah, Nintendo's really getting its tendons into all the different hands that it needs to, I think. Or trying to.
Tendons into the hands? Okay.
I don't know where I was going with that, but certainly it's a thing that they're trying to do, and they want their game played by as many people who it should be played by, it seems, as possible.
I guess trying to regain the respect of the fighting game audience demographic that maybe they've gone away from in recent years, because it's been a while since the last Smash Brothers game.
Yes.
So trying to remind them, hey, Smash Brothers is a good fighting game. Remember? See? Here it is. You can play it. Reacquaint yourself with the mechanics and remember how fun it is.
Indeed.
But speaking of reminding yourselves of things, everyone got a big blast of nostalgia a couple of weeks ago, early in June, when it was announced that LeVar Burton was doing a Kickstarter campaign for Reading Rainbow.
Yes, trying to bring it back because it had been canceled, and he really thought that, well, him and what clearly turned out to be a lot of other people felt that reading is important, and, more of the underprivileged children in America deserve to have access to good resources on reading, because illiteracy is bad.
It can kind of be a problem amongst, the major society as a whole, and you don't want that.
No.
So he's felt that, you know, the public school system isn't doing a good job and there's just far too much illiteracy, so he wanted to bring back Reading Rainbow as an online video series and also bring it back in a form that could be applicable to classrooms and have in schools. So his initial target was $1 million, and he had that within a day.
Yes.
And so the campaign just went for another couple weeks after that. It ended last week on July 2nd, and the final tally for the Reading Rainbow Kickstarter, as brought forward by LeVar Burton, ended up at $5.4 million.
With an asterisk beside it, because it's actually at least $1 million more than that. Because during the last... Well, during the last kind of push to try to get up to $5 million, because after they reached the $1 million goal so quickly, they kind of restructured the Kickstarter page and made it seem more like, okay, we've got our million, but our real goal that we really would like to try to get is $5 million. So the last push was Seth MacFarlane revealed that between $4 million and $5 million, he would match every donation $1 to $1 up to $1 million. So they made it up to $5 million. So Seth... had to put in $1 million of his own, so that's really $6.4 million in the bank of Reading Rainbow.
Which is pretty damn good.
Yes.
And this actually puts it as one of the highest grossing, the fifth highest grossing Kickstarter campaign of all time, which, granted, is not a long time in Kickstarter's history. No.
And it's certainly not the most percentage funded. That, unfortunately, looks like it's probably going to be taken by that stupid potato salad Kickstarter that's been going around the internet.
Which, let us not talk about that.
Let's not talk about that. Don't look at that. That's bad. Reading Rainbow, things like this are good.
Yes, I don't have my medication here to calm me down to speak about the potato salad Kickstarter.
Indeed.
Nevertheless, the other higher-grossing Kickstarter campaigns that achieved more money than the Reading Rainbow one were the Veronica Mars movie, which achieved $5.7 million, Neil Young's Pono music player, the High Def music player,
which we've called out on this show before,
which achieved $6.2 million in funding, the Ouya console, which ended up with $8.6 million, and the Pebble Watch, which is a, well, interactive smartwatch that achieved $10.2 million in funding.
Indeed.
Which is, that's a lot of green.
Yes, it is. So good on LeVar Burton and good on all the Reading Rainbow people. Glad it actually will be able to do some good.
And the nice thing is, because it passed the $5 million mark, the project is now going to be able to come to Xbox and PlayStation consoles, though specifically which ones has yet to be determined. It's also going to be able to come out on mobile devices and other set-top boxes like Apple TVs, Rokus, Kindle Fire TVs, yada, yada, yada. And it ended up with over... the support of more than 105,000 people. So that's a pretty impressive total, considering basically weeks two through three and a, well, four and a half, the funding had just stagnated so much.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was just kind of that dead in the water period. I mean, we've seen it a lot with other Kickstarters as well, that there seems to be almost like two main pushes. Like, the main push that happens when the project's first announced and the first wave of the buzz kind of happens. And then, within the last, really, few days, when the project's about to come to a close and they start throwing all these additional promises at the project, saying, oh, look, we've added all these different reward tiers and this celebrity's doing blah for us and we've got these five other people who are doing this in a partnership with blah. And then, you know, that's when a whole bunch of craziness usually starts to happen in the last few days.
And
I've never seen a sustained Kickstarter...
For a 4 or 5 week period, I'd imagine that would be hard. Because there's, you know, we can use this as a great, you know, casebook example. There's the initial thrust. It gets a lot of buzz. In some cases, goes viral. This Kickstarter went very viral.
Yeah, very quickly.
Exactly. And... probably, I'd assume, because it achieved its funding level, its target, so quickly, well, interest would have waned a little bit, and people tune in or dial up the page and see, oh, it's, you know, at, oh, it's already there. Yeah, maybe I'll, you know.
So, yeah, good on them. They don't need my help. I'm glad it's coming back, though.
Yes, exactly. You know, becoming a well-wisher instead of a backer, but then they tune in maybe a couple weeks later and see, oh, hey, it's almost, you know, it's almost done. Oh, hey, they got all these crazy things now? All right, I'm game
yeah,
for
maybe
those.
I can go for a T-shirt. Yeah, all right. Or, yeah. It's or, like, oh, or Patrick Stewart coming to my school for $10,000. Like, that wasn't one of the things, but there was involvement of several Star Trek people, naturally.
Naturally. It seems like he dipped into not just the, you know, all his friends from the Next Generation cast, but he went cross Star Trek cast. He had William Shatner involved as well.
Yeah.
Kate Mulgrew.
Indeed.
And not just Star Trek. He did also, call on favors from some friends and people he knows from Battlestar Galactica.
And Seth MacFarlane, too, really, like.
Yeah.
That was kind of really surprising to me.
That was out of left field. Honest.
I didn't see that one come. I know Seth MacFarlane was a big Star Trek fan, and specifically a fan of The Next Generation, and he had the whole cast on Family Guy and whatnot before, but I didn't actually anticipate him saying that he would give $1 million to Reading Rainbow, of all things.
Seth MacFarlane is really one of those guys who will surprise you, it seems. Sure, he's, you know, most notable for his work on Family Guy, American Dad, Cleveland Show.
Yeah, a lot of lowbrow, easy humor that he's been kind of known for these days, in my opinion.
But it's made him filthy rich.
Yes.
And he's used some of not just his financial resources now available to him, but his clout in the entertainment industry to most notably bring back Cosmos in a new form, a Spacetime Odyssey, hosted by Neil deGrasse Tyson. Fantastic series if you haven't watched it yet. It's available on DVD, Blu-ray, I'm sure other online forums or platforms like Netflix, Hulu, yada yada. And now this, to fight illiteracy.
Not to foster illiteracy.
Yes, no.
That's the exact opposite of
that. That would be the ironic goal of this.
It's reading in quotations rainbow.
Both reading and rainbow are in quotation marks.
Yeah, but separately, it's two separate words where it's reading and then space, rainbow, both in quotations separately.
Yes, so you don't actually get to read, and it's not actually a rainbow.
Oh. It's just like...
It's a double kick in the teeth.
Indeed.
Try and spell that one, Billy. Oh, wait, you can't.
Sorry. But
so that is a great thing. There's going to be a lot of children that are going to benefit from this, not just in American schools. It's going to be an online resource available to teachers all around the world.
Yeah, so anyone who really wants to kind of use Reading Rainbow as a tool can do it. And Reading Rainbow was a good tool to teach reading. I mean, I watch Reading Rainbow a lot.
Certainly.
I learned about a lot of different books via Reading Rainbow. I didn't really so much care for the kids' opinions on the stories or whatnot.
What the hell do they know?
It's like, kids don't know anything. It's like, I can give my opinion on Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs as well. Get off the screen. Get out of here. But
you really watched it for the field trips that LeVar would go on.
Yeah, of course. But, chalk that up to another successful Kickstarter.
Exactly.
Speaking of successful Kickstarters.
Let's.
Another one that we would be remiss as a video game program to not talk about would have been the Mighty No. 9. Kickstarter. It was
highly successful last year.
Yeah, he was. I don't remember the small number of money he was looking for. Well, it wasn't really a small number of money. I think it was somewhere to the tune of $900,000.
$750,000 to $900,000. It was. It was under a million.
It was under a million. It was in that close to a million, but not quite a million range. He ended up making $3.8 million, or might have been over four at one point. But yeah,
that he we're speaking of is Kaiji Inafune, the creator of Mega Man and his Mighty No. 9. Kickstarter campaign.
Yes, which is essentially just a new Mega Man game, and it was successfully super funded, and it reached a ton of interesting stretch goals. Looks like that game will be coming out for tons and tons of different systems, but Kaiji Inafune is looking for more money for Mighty No. 9. We have to clarify here.
Okay, Tim Schafer.
Yeah, we have to clarify here that he is not Tim Screwbudget Schafer.
Oh, you're walking me back from the platform here.
Yes.
Okay.
So, he's not doing that.
He didn't go to Tim Schafer's School of Business?
the Tim Schafer School of Accounting and Finance? No, he didn't.
You need this much money, and then blow that all, and then say you need even more money to finish what you initially said you needed the money for. Thanks, Tim Schafer.
Yeah. It wasn't just this much money. Ask for a super small amount of money. Like, I think Tim Schafer was asking for something like $400,000. And then he got a crazy amount of money and then went way crazy over budget with that kind of money. How does that happen?
He bought a DeLorean. What else are you going to do? I've got $3.5 million. I only needed way less than that to make this game.
It's like, well,
I'm cold. Let's toss another stack of hundreds on the fire.
Just Krusty the Clown lighting a cigar with a pearl necklace. But yes, no. Kaiji Inafune is not doing that. He's not lighting cigars with any pearl necklaces. He's not betting against the Harlem Globetrotters.
I thought they were doomed.
He's spinning the ball on his finger.
So we're not going to see any Kaiji Inafune branded, lady upper hair lip removal system.
No. But what he's asking for is money to fill in a few of the gaps, maybe, that the Kickstarter campaign, near the end of the life of the Kickstarter campaign, left, really. I mean, like, as they started coming up with stretch goals, like, at one point, it seemed like they were coming up with stretch goals faster than... Or not, they weren't coming up with stretch goals fast enough.
Yeah, the funding was surpassing what the stretch goals that had already been set.
Yeah, so... It seems like near the end of the life of the campaign, they'd come up with a couple of interesting stretch goals that, well, didn't quite make it under the buzzer, they looked at them and went, actually, these would be really cool if we could get these as well. And we're this far. I mean, the game's still going to be made regardless. The game is in very good shape regardless. But if you really want to see a couple of these extra things, he's asking for what? Somewhere around $100,000 additional dollars just to get things like English voice acting.
Full English voice acting in the game. That's the only, goal that's been announced so far in this PayPal-based crowdfunding campaign. We have to specify it's a PayPal-based funding campaign, and it's not being done through Kickstarter. It's being done through their own site, which you can find the link to on our site, thearcadeshow.com. Yeah, it's, I guess, just to add bonus content and augment the game and just maybe add a bit more, sprucing up to a couple aspects of the game that maybe they weren't able to get to in the initial round of crowdfunding. So it's a neat idea. I mean, doing post-Kickstarter crowdfunding is not really a new idea. Star Citizen has been raising money hand over fist almost at a rate of like $1 million a month. So the massively online space sim game, Star Citizen, I think is up to 40, somewhat over 40 million now in just monies raised. And they've been off Kickstarter for a while. And it's all PayPal-based crowdfunding. So, and also too, as Kaiji Inafune says, that it will enable those who missed the initial crowdfunding campaign a chance to score pre-launch copies of the game as well as other digital goodies. Kickstarter exclusive rewards will remain Kickstarter exclusive so as to not piss off the people who got in on the Kickstarter campaign.
Oh, for sure. And they'd like to note too that it's separate from another Mighty No. 9 related thing that
another project they announced actually last weekend at the Anime Expo,
which actually confused me when I read both of these news items in tandem because I thought one was related to funding the other, which no, as it turns out, it's not. This second project is a Mighty No. 9 animated series.
Indeed, full CG animated series. We don't know too many details about it. There's only a 2-minute CG trailer that was shown off at the Anime Expo. Again, we have the link to it posted on our website, thearcadeshow.com.
I mean, it's a fun little video. It's mostly just Mighty No. 9 playing with the narrator a bit, being kind of funny and silly.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure how much insight into the actual series it gives us, or anything like that, but there's that. But this crowdfunding campaign is not to fund that. Apparently they're fine for that side of things.
Yes. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that turns out. But a nice little symmetry here. Mega Man, when it was still a very hot property that Capcom still, wanted to make games of, in the 90s at the very least, it also enjoyed an animated series a couple of times, if I recall correctly.
Well, also, Mega Man, for some reason, the only one I'm thinking of is when Mega Man was just a crappy secondary character in Captain N, the Game Master.
And really didn't look anything like he did in the games?
No, and he sounded like some sort of, like, like frog or something, and just like, hey, I'm Mega Man. It's like, wow, you're super annoying. As are the rest of you video game characters, specifically you, Simon Belmont. Ugh. Just awful.
I don't know what you're talking about.
FYI?
And the Game Boy? The giant Game Boy?
Oh my god.
Don't forget the giant Game Boy.
And all the bad guys who are all for some reason teamed up together.
King Eggplant?
King Eggplant, Mother Brain.
Mother Brain!
That's awful. Who is essentially just...
Someone did a Little Richard impression for that character, and they just ran with it. No explanation necessary, because...
It was like a strange hybrid of Little Richard, the crocodile from All Dogs Go to Heaven, and the plant from Little Shop of Horrors, I think. But all that aside, that's...
Yeah, I'm seeing it. Namely, Little Richard.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There's a very flamboyant element to Mother Brain, which seemed unnecessary.
Very unnecessary, considering this was like the non-speaking horrendous alien from, like, Metroid. But whatever, that was all the 80s. It was a totally different time from now, which theoretically should be better. I have no idea.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
But we'll see how it turns out. But I just like that. That was one thing that struck me when I read the announcement of the CG animated series was, hey, you know, Mega Man had an animated series too. It wasn't CG because you couldn't do CG back then.
No, there
cheaply.
Was no CG.
But, you know, hey, Mega Man had a cartoon series. Mighty No. 9 is getting a cartoon series. Could you make it any more clear? This is straight up Mega Man.
And then there's the other... interesting, crazy rumor mill speculation that people on the internet are wondering what will be next with Kaiji Inafune and Kickstarter, but with Capcom apparently, being for sale?
For sale. They're open to a hostile takeover when they weren't before, so that's, you know, some people online posting comments that may be encouraging Kaiji Inafune to... At very least, try and do a hostile takeover.
Or try to get Mega Man back at the bare minimum. Just buy his intellectual property back. Because it's clear what he was trying to do with Mighty No. 9, which is make a new Mega Man game. But
I'd like to see Kaiji Inafune and Nintendo team up to get Mega Man back.
That would be kind of cool. I could see it. I could definitely see it. But that's... about as far into the rumor mill as we should probably go.
Exactly. And we'll stick to hard fact. And a hard fact that came out this week was the announcement of some really, really interesting pre-order DLC that was announced for the upcoming game, Alien Isolation. It's a new game in the Alien movie franchise. Since the last one, Colonial Marines, Space Marines, the last Aliens game that didn't really fare too well.
Yeah,
wasn't a hit commercially, wasn't a hit critically, just kind of bombed, and people were wondering if there's just any juice left in the Alien video game franchise.
And hopefully, I guess, there might be. Alien Isolation has an interesting pre-order DLC that they announced that will be a thing, that has a very interesting... well, feature set to it, you could say.
It does indeed, and reminds me a bit of the Ghostbuster video game, because it's bringing back almost the entire cast from the original Alien film from 1979.
Yes, that's Sigourney Weaver, all the people, in case you don't know who they are, Sigourney Weaver as Ellen Ripley, who she's reprising for the first time in 17 years, since I believe it was Alien Resurrection.
I believe so, yes.
She'll be joined by Tom Skerritt, who is Dallas, Veronica Cartwright as Lambert, Harry Dean Stanton as Brett, and Yapit Kotto as Parker.
And so this pre-order DLC that you can get will contain two missions, which will allow players to... both of them will allow players to relive classic scenes from that original movie that is a cult hit. Absolute cult hit and mainstream success.
Yes.
Tremendous mainstream success for Ridley Scott. Anyone who pre-orders the game will get a free upgrade to the Nostromo Edition, which includes the first part of the two DLC missions, the first entitled Crew Expendable, which takes place moments after the death of Brett in the movie. It sees the players assuming the role of Ripley, Dallas, or Parker as the crew of the Nostromo attempt to flush the alien from the air vents and into the ship's airlock, and depending on which character you choose, you'll have a slightly different perspective on events and will begin with different resources.
Yes, and then the second pre-order mission, which is Last Survivor, will be available through select retailers, depending on territory. It's set during the finale of the film. You play as Ripley, and you have to activate the Nostromo self-destruct sequence and reach the Narcissus shuttle in order to escape. So that should be a little bit more intense and teeth-gritting.
Yes, certainly. And the pre-order missions, according to the developer, have been devised as what-if scenarios. This, according to the game's creative director, Alistair Hope, who once he spoke to IGN, actually, about this pre-order DLC, he said, quote, "There's no point in us trying to match beat-for-beat what occurs in the film. The film is much better at doing that than the game. We came up with the approach these guys had a plan to try and take on the alien to flush it out of an airlock. What else could have happened?"
So, presumably, if they've put that much thought into this idea, presumably there would be several different things that could happen. Crazy variables that could happen. Maybe even just silly things that could happen. Who knows? Interesting idea for sure. And hopefully this could breathe a little bit of new life back into the alien video game world. Because it's kind of a shame that it's never done well.
Just something about it hasn't translated properly. I think it clearly needs to be an endless runner. Of Ripley endlessly outrunning the Xenomorph.
Oh, for God's sakes. Well, there is hope. They might be able to get the license still to Subway Surfers and reskin it with Ripley and the Xenomorph.
And have different levels where you trade off. One level, you're Ripley outrunning the Xenomorph, of course, through town, dodging cars and traffic cones. Yeah. And the other level, you're the Xenomorph chasing after Ripley.
Yeah, of course, still running through town, dodging cars.
Except
the jumping over trains, just like in the movie.
Or the Xenomorph just plows through them.
Yeah, just
just like in the movie.
Yeah, just like in the movie.
Trains in space.
Yeah, trains in space, cars in space, traffic cones in space. Oh, man.
And then additional DLC, put Forrest Gump into the game.
Oh, man.
Nailed it!
This is not only the worst game I've ever heard of in my life, but also the best game I've ever heard of in my life.
It's really the approach you take when you're hungry and you look into your fridge to see what you have, and you have a lot of separate and unrelated parts, and you just say, to hell with it, I'm putting everything in a bowl.
Or you're hungry while shopping and decide, hey, yes, I need this whole pack of cookies. I need this thing of pickles. Oh, yeah, look at this whole new cereal. Oh, yeah, okay, now, oh, ice cream sounds good.
Oh, I need some ketchup, too.
Oh, ketchup is good as well. And then you come home with all this crap that you really can't make a proper meal out of, but you were shopping while you were hungry, and all the different whims of your stomach were guiding your shopping needs.
And you combine them anyway to see what the hell happens, and it's either going to go amazing or disgusting.
Yes, greater chance it'll be disgusting. And no, we would like to clarify, Forrest Gump is not actually one of the options, and nor is an Endless Runner alien game. That would be terrible. We'll just clarify that, just in case our sarcasm was not laid on thick enough.
I think we needed an extra coat of sarcasm to paint that wagon. But we'll move on to some other news. News of release dates here, just to bring you, so you can mark your calendar, because October is a kind of a busy month for games, and games that are going to be coming out for systems that will all be clamoring to try and get at your disposable income. The first game we're going to talk about is coming out on October 7th, the same day as Alien Isolation releases. If you're not into the game, if you're not really familiar with the Alien franchise, and maybe you just want to have a different experience than what Alien Isolation has to offer.
Maybe you want to make a different experience than what Alien Isolation has to offer.
Then the game that's for you will be Project Spark.
Yes, for Xbox One and PC, for Windows 8.1, that is to say, specifically, I think, since it is made by Microsoft, and Microsoft wants to isolate things to their own things. They don't want to make a Mac version or anything, I would imagine. But Microsoft Project Spark with maybe a 360 version coming out. Possibly, probably not.
Well, that remains to be seen. They're still, I guess, in the process of figuring that out. But Xbox One and PC, for sure, for Project Spark. Again, the ambitious game-building game, or sim, or... We don't even know if Project Spark is the final name of it, and or if that's still the working title, but it was the game that was shown off at the Microsoft conference of E3 2013 that was part Sims, part SimCity, part... entry point into almost programming in some ways.
It seems like it was almost like a super user-friendly, like Unity or something. Unity being a game development, well, set of tools that a lot of games are actually based on. But Project Spark, which is currently in open beta on Xbox One and PC, for Windows 8.1 users, at launch, gamers will be able to download the full Project Spark game on Xbox One and PC for free, but they will also obviously offer a special paid disc-based Xbox One version as well.
And you'll be able to get something called the Project Spark Starter Pack.
So that's what that special paid disc is.
Yes.
It's $40. It'll come loaded with the Galaxy's First Contact expansion pack, the Warrior Champion Sir Hakon, or Sir Hawken, I guess, Hawk character, and the first episode of the game's campaign mode called Champion's Quest, Void Storm.
It's also going to, that starter pack will also include access to other various paid content, features, and add-ons, according to Microsoft. All of the digital content and more will be available for the digital versions of Spark, of Project Spark, on the Xbox One and PC at launch, but Microsoft has not set any... given any details for pricing.
Yes. And in case you missed it at E3, because there was a ton of news at E3 and not everyone was able to get to every little bit of information, the one little tidbit regarding Project Spark that was kind of revealed was that Conker from, you know, the beloved Rare character that you might remember, or might not, from Conker's Bad Fur Day, will be a playable character in Project Spark.
So as opposed to him having his own brand new game, he'll be thrown in there, and you can make a new game for him. No word yet if you can make a giant mountain of poo sing opera.
And yes. That seems high, sure.
Seems highly unlikely in the game, as they're going for a more, well, G rating, if you wish to put it that way. E
presumably,
for everyone.
Yes.
And perhaps poo or opera singing poos are not in the cards.
No, probably not.
A crying shame.
Indeed.
But if you play through all of Project Spark when you get it on October 7th, and you want a new experience a couple of weeks later, on October 24th, you will be able to get the new Civilization game, Sid Meier's Civilization Beyond Earth, coming to you from Firaxis and 2K Games, which will hit the PC systems on October 24th. And it was actually at E3, there was a brand new gameplay video of it shown off, which we have the link to on our website, thearcadeshow.com.
A lot of people are calling it the spiritual successor, which is a term I hate, but I think it actually works in this case, to Alpha Centauri, which was the Sid Meier non-civilization post, first one of the original post-civilization, but still civilization-esque games that he did, in space. It was Alpha Centauri, and this is, a lot of people are kind of looking at it as a new Alpha Centauri game, even though it's has Civilization in the title. But I think that's just because Civilization is more top of mind for people these days.
True, and it's probably, well, I mean, it's going to draw more people in because it's such a successful franchise, and you're drawing a connection between the two. But even the gameplay video looks very similar to a Civilization game.
Yeah, a lot of people were kind of commenting that it almost just looks like a reskin Civilization 5.
Or something that would exist as an expansion pack.
Yeah.
Which... on the one hand, is disappointing, but on the other hand, think of it this way. It's a brand new Civilization game.
Yeah, I mean, it's... who cares if it's the same engine? It's an entirely separate set of stuff that you can do. Whole new factions, whole new quests that you can do, which they say quests are a brand new addition to the game. I mean, if Civilization turns your crank, this one certainly will steal a lot of time from you, I would imagine.
Certainly. If you wish to rid yourself of all that pesky history aspect in Civilization game right propers, well, explore the future and explore brave new worlds. Seek out new civilizations. All that kind of thing.
Yes. though, when I was watching this trailer, I couldn't help but think there was several things about it that were kind of stupid. Like, the fact that humanity... Well, I mean, I can get humanity being broken into separate factions, like, or having ideologies that they want to take with them. Like, there's the... There are certain humans that want to integrate with different planets and species on different planets. Then there's the humans that want to remain human no matter where they go. And then there's the other faction that wants to kind of terraform any planet that they go on to make it exactly like Earth. So that kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. But what I thought was stupid was they showed that you, I don't know what country you represent, because countries are still a thing apparently in this future that humanity is looking for additional planets to colonize.
Countries or corporations.
Yes, something along those lines. But either way, there was, they showed that you can do espionage, and it just shows you landing on this planet. And my initial understanding was, oh, you're just landing on this planet fresh after just kind of like dropping off some supplies in advance. You have to find your supplies and set up a station. No, then they pan the map over and go, oh, you can set up espionage just by the Americans over here. And I'm like, really? Really? So, as humanity, still, as separate countries, we're sending out colonists from separate countries to colonize the same planets, but set up new versions of our countries on those planets to have the same potential, like... Like faction-based warring and stuff?
The same conflicts that we experience?
Like, really? That's what we're doing in outer space? Like, especially since they mentioned one was the Americans and one was an African... Some sort of space-sounding African name. I don't remember what it was. I'm sorry. But it was... Yeah, I don't know. And that was just kind of silly. I mean, it still looked cool, but that part of it, I had a hard time suspending my disbelief over that.
Are you saying that was a bit on the nose?
A little bit.
Fair enough, I'll grant that. But the gameplay, like I said, it struck me as looking very similar to a Civilization game. But I guess that's to be expected. It is a Sid Meier's Firaxis game, so that's... I mean, there's only so far they can deviate from it without... and still need to, you know, be close enough to the original circle to still be... considered a Civilization game, so it still looks very good all the same, very enjoyable, very entertaining, and if you're into that sort of thing, it's coming out October 24th on the PC.
Indeed.
But now that we've kind of run through the news of the week of what we wanted to get to, I think it's time that we get to how we always end the show, that is, with a blast from the past.
Yes, this one, well, what we're doing this year, it seems, is just movies. Pretty much just movies that... that are celebrating interesting anniversaries. Well, this week is no different.
Not just movies, but things in general that are celebrating worthwhile anniversaries, milestone anniversaries. This week, we have a movie. Movies seem to be the most common one, yes, but this week, celebrating its 10th anniversary, is a movie that introduced to us the concept of hot jazz flute in the 70s.
And Sex Panther, wherein... What was it? 60% of the time, it works all the time?
Yes. Sex Panther cologne. And also just showed us that it is possible for a man to love his dog and for that dog to have such a strong connection to find his owner once again when it seemed that the odds were against them.
Yes. And also that milk was a bad choice.
And also that... a phone booth is actually a glass case of emotion.
This and hundreds of other ridiculous quotes can be pulled from July 9th of 2004's Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy. If you haven't watched Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, you are truly missing out on one of the modern comedy masterpieces.
That is high praise.
Well, do you not agree?
I think it's up there.
Good.
It stands as one of the most quotable movies possible.
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, there was a period of time slightly before Anchorman that I didn't really like Will Ferrell. I thought he was kind of one-dimensional. I thought that, like, the roles he played were kind of awkward to watch and weren't really, you know, that... Like, he was funny, but he was a bit much.
Well, Night at the Roxbury didn't really help.
No. But, yeah, I mean, so... It was kind of like, another Will Ferrell movie. But then, like, all of the scenes I saw all seemed to be really funny. And it knew exactly what it was doing. It's just being totally overblown and ridiculous while still being very set in... Trying to be set in this... In, like, the 70s, really. In, like, this very specific kind of weird idealized version of what you would imagine 70s newscasters to be like. And... As it turns out, like, later on, I've read with interviews that with Will Ferrell and stuff, and heard, even when he was on other podcasts, like Mark Maron's WTF podcast, if you can find it online somewhere, he talks about how he was greatly influenced by Newsmen, and he really wanted to do some sort of great tribute to all of, like, the funny, quirky ones that he remembered growing up watching them on television, which is not necessarily the place that you'd find... really brilliant comedy, but Will Ferrell saw differently, and...
He even managed to work in a nice nod to the old Newsmen with the narrator of Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, being Bill Curtis.
Yes.
A man with just a great voice for narration, and a throwback to just old news and old journalism from a different and certainly bygone era. But I think what makes Anchorman work so well... to me, anyway, is the fact that it's a strong ensemble cast.
Yes.
And it's not purely Will Ferrell
yes.
carrying the film.
That is very true. I mean,
same thing with Old School.
Yeah. Or Step Brothers. Or several movies that came out in and around the time of Anchorman that actually kind of solidified, like, the Will Ferrell bunch mm-hmm. of guys as being, like, actually, like, a viable comedy group, much like the Ben Stiller group of guys or the, Well, there's a couple other ones. I guess like the Adam Sandler crew, or the Judd Apatow group, or whatever.
And actually,
Judd Apatow was actually heavily involved in Anchorman. He was the producer, I believe.
I believe so.
Perhaps.
Certainly involved in the creative process and bringing the film to market. But this movie had also Paul Rudd.
Yes.
Dave Koechner as Champ Kind, the sports guy.
Yes, and Steve Carell as Brick Tamlin.
In what I dare say was the breakout role for Steve Carell.
Yes. I mean, a more bizarre character I think you would have a hard time finding. I can't even really explain Brick Tamlin. He's like a mentally challenged guy who manages to speak perfectly eloquently still. It's really a role that could only exist in a stupid comedy movie. Really. Like, it's not a real-life character at all.
In addition to them, of course, they are his main anchor crew, and the conflict of the movie comes when Christina Applegate's Veronica Corningstone character becomes a co-anchor with Will Ferrell on the evening news, which,
yes.
of course, he doesn't take too kindly to.
Also, in a time when women were not typically... respected in professional roles, I guess.
This is
of course,
true.
I'm sure it was amplified for the movie to more comedic effect, but I guess it was still making that commentary nonetheless. But, yeah, it was...
Oh, and I also have to give a shout-out to their station manager, Fred Willard.
Yes, of course.
His one-sided phone calls. Worth it. So worth it.
Like... The type of movie it was had to have Fred Willard in it. I mean, he's just that type of character actor that does roles that, really, Anchorman was full of.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to agree. And also, going for it, ridiculous cameos.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Just nonstop cameos. Jack Black.
Yeah, even Ben Stiller.
Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn.
Yeah.
And they all get together and have a wonderful just throwdown.
An interesting scene, which if you've never seen it, I'm not going to spoil it. It's let's just say it escalates quickly.
Boy howdy, does it ever! And you can say that about the movie as a whole. Anchorman: The Legend of Ron Burgundy came out July 9th, 2004. It's a shame they didn't wait until this weekend to release. The Anchorman sequel, The Legend Continues,
yes.
On the 10th anniversary of it.
Yes, even though, didn't get as universally good praise. I still liked it, but still. I think it's worth watching. But the first one, for sure, worth watching, 100%. If you've never watched Anchorman, you need to watch Anchorman.
It's worth watching. It's worth getting the DVDs also for the deleted scenes.
Oh, yes.
Because so much of the movie is just them improvising.
Oh, yeah. And they're all good at it. And they're all quite funny guys.
And so it is well worth it for that reason alone, and because, I mean, it's not like there's any big movies coming out this weekend anyway, so if you don't want to see apes destroy things, then stay in and reacquaint yourself with Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, again, coming out July 9th, 2004, so it has celebrated its 10th anniversary already, and you need to honor it.
Indeed.
The 10th anniversary is the rewatching anniversary.
Yes, when it comes to movies.
Certainly.
That is the Please Be Kind rewind anniversary.
I'm inclined to agree.
To make perhaps a 10-year-old reference to something that no longer is applicable in our society at all.
Rewinding movies before you take them back to the rental store?
Yes, in your race car rewinder that you had. That. You have to be a certain age to get that joke, and hopefully some people out there got the joke, and we don't just seem like we're old curmudgeons on this program.
But if we do come off as old curmudgeons, we apologize, but let us know what some other more timely topical references you'd like to hear us make here on The Arcade by shooting us an email, info@thearcadeshow.com.
Or just going to our website, thearcadeshow.com, and finding the Contact Us form on there.
Indeed.
If email is too hard for you to manage.
If you are just burdened by email and just want to type freely without going into your Gmail, Hotmail, your Outlook.
Anything like that.
Yahoo Mail, if that's a thing still. I don't know.
Your AOL, perhaps.
Why not? So that is how you can do it. Or you can also shoot us a tweet. We are on the Twitter @TheArcadeShow and on Facebook. We are facebook.com/TheArcadeShow.
Indeed.
That about wraps us up for this week's edition of The Arcade. So thank you so much for joining us, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. And we hope you can join us again next week when we shall return. So until then, everybody, good night.
Good night.